This podcast does contain spoilers, so if you're okay with that, listen on. If not, pause the podcast, go watch the movie we're about to talk about, and come on back.
All right, sweet.
Excuse me.
Brian, over here. Hey.
Pardon me.
Why don't you have the popcorn? It's starting!
Woo!
Hey!
Shut up. Shut up and listen to the podcast. Hey!
There's a lot out there to see. This is what we watched.
That evil laugh really irritates me.
My evil laugh?
Yes, because you think it's funny. Welcome to What We Watched.
That was good.
Thanks. I thought that was a good one.
Great segue.
We're here. We're back. We're doing it. We're not the boys, but we are boys, and we're
back in town.
We're back and we're doing stuff.
Yeah. Feo fuerte y formal.
I'll
give you two out of the three.
All right, we're all over the place. This is a podcast for movie lovers. It's for TV lovers. It's especially for TV lovers who like finishing series. Unlike me, who has not finished The Boys yet.
Boo.
Sorry, guys. Can't talk about The Boys. Oh, well.
Matt's one to talk.
Instead.
I know, I want to talk, but we did all finish Fallout.
Hell yeah, we did.
Hell yeah.
So today we're talking episode 7. Which is titled, I thought I had it pulled up and then I forgot I had to reconfigure everything. It's called The Radio.
The Radio.
So we got two episodes left. Today's episode 7, the second to last episode. If it's super echoey, apologies to anyone who's listening and or possibly editing this. We're in an unknown, undisclosed location for the first time here. We might be
kind
back
of a
next
vault
week.
In and of itself.
It's a little bit of a vault. We're a little bit away from society.
We have a better view than the vaults have, though.
I don't think so.
I don't think so. Those vaults have like the manufactured kind of... Kansas skyline.
Right, exactly. They have those like, those like 4D cinema cameras.
That's what everybody wants in their home.
Those projectors, not cameras. They're projectors.
How much do you
want
to bet they actually use that, though, to create that effect in the vaults?
Oh, and so, yeah, and actually do like practical?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Because, I mean, they did it for Mandalorian. Uh-huh. That whole technique, sorry to like segue a little bit, but that whole technique was it was kind of perfected and just kind of rushed through during the pandemic when they were trying to get stuff done and it was hard to have like giant sound stages worth of people.
Sure.
So to have like somewhat realistic ground and then those projectors like all around, it saved so much time and money.
Yeah. I mean, I can't speak to it. Unfortunately, I don't know about the production of this. So glad you're listening to this podcast about Fallout.
Oh,
but that wouldn't surprise me because that would, you know, anything to soften the budget, anything to you know make it a little bit easier to shoot would make sense to me.
Yeah. Budgets are always the bane of the existence of any production.
Yep. Exactly.
Yes, it is.
Unless you're Francis Ford Coppola,
then you use your wine money.
Which, okay, I finally saw a trailer for Megalopolis at the theaters, and...
Oh, they actually have a trailer out now?
They do.
In theaters?
I was impressed.
Okay.
Like, I'm excited to see this.
Okay. I mean, I was excited when he announced it early last year,
mm-hmm.
and it was like, actually, it's going to get pushed, and then the strikes happened, and all that.
Yeah.
So I'm shocked. Is it supposed to be released this year still, or is that pushed to 2025?
I believe it's this year or early 2025. So like March 2025.
Okay.
I thought it was this year.
I know. I don't know if it's been pushed.
If it's
again.
This year, then it's already going to be Oscar bait.
Well, honestly,
September 27th, 2024.
Oh, cool. I honestly didn't realize it was that soon.
Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
So they have to get the marketing out.
A couple of months. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, honestly, and I mentioned this on a previous episode, that this year so far has been barren as far as Oscar contenders.
Yeah.
So yeah. I'm ready for those kind of movies again. I'm
Barren
ready. I'm
as
ready.
A Wasteland.
Hey, bringing it back. Good job, Luke. Luke, did you watch the episodes or something?
I did for once. Oh, my God.
He rewatched
and it's actually a pretty good thing I did because I didn't catch all of the finale the first time around.
Well, it's okay because we're not talking the finale today. We'll talk about that next time.
All right, next time.
Today, however, yeah, so we're talking the radio. And this is
Radio Gaga.
Oh, dear God. So this is there a mute button for him? Is there a dial we can turn down?
No, just this gun.
Oh, cool. Please keep that handy.
Okay, cool.
Because you never know what's going to happen when you when you're out, you know, lead farming. You know, if you're a lead farmer, motherfucker, that, you know, it comes precious territory.
How were you able to weave that in? A Tropic Thunder reference.
That's what I do, man. Come on.
First one on air. 10th one today.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. We've been quoting it like crazy.
Yeah. I'm impressed with the one I did earlier, and I'm not going to try and repeat it. I'll see if we can work my way back into that one. However, anyway, so this episode starts with a couple guys digging through the sand, trying to find metals or something. Mm-hmm. And it's the first glimpse that we get of the new California Republic, like the power armor, basically, like their version of the armor, I guess. Yeah. I was going to say like copper, you know, renegade or something like that, but I don't think that's what it is. I think that's literally just their wasteland armor.
Yeah.
But so that was really cool to see. And that kind of teases a little bit into what happens, you know, next episode and then potentially moving into season two with where we go. But I really liked it. That just the aesthetic choice of it. It looks super clean. Looks super sick. I love it. I love that one a lot. And then, of course, then so father and son get home, and you know, after a long, hard days of finding one bullet, good job, guys. They come home to find the ghoul is sitting at their kitchen table,
enjoying a nice meal,
chomping away at something.
Yeah, that scene had me sweating for that family.
Sweating bullets, maybe?
Sweating bullets, yeah.
I'm on a roll today.
It called back to a movie I saw a couple years back. I want to say 21, called The Heart of a Fall.
Okay.
Very interesting, like very similar opening where it's a family that's doing their own thing, and then they just so happen to run into someone they know and really wish they didn't know. And
Okay. I don't think I know who with this movie.
Idris Elba. It's a Western.
The Harder They Fall.
Yeah. Oh, it's good. It's who else is in it? Jonathan Majors, Regina King, Lakeith Stanfield. And they're all playing real icons of the Old West that were black.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so good. It is one of the best Westerns I've seen in a while, and it's got Kid Cudi doing the soundtrack.
I'm going to have to check this out for sure. Oh, yeah, this sounds good. This sounds interesting.
Netflix has it.
All right, cool. Good to know. Shout out to them.
But anyway.
So the ghoul is sitting at the farmer's table and eating. And Luke, you're right. I mean, I was also like, what the fuck? Like, I knew this guy was fucked up, but he's not child eating fucked up, right? And the score plays into it. The camera plays into it. The ghoul totally plays up into it.
Yeah.
Just enjoying this, you know, bite after bite. And then the little daughter runs up and gives him a glass of something. Oh, yeah, cool. Thank God he's not eating a child. But man,
they've done that
scene
a couple times with the ghoul where they have him doing these heinous things, but really it's all just for show. It's a means to an end. I mean, he is an actor.
Yeah, I kind of realized in these last two episodes that he still has that part of him.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
his dramatic entrances, the way he just like...
Yeah, he hurts the dog in like the second or third episode. But then he heals it with a stim pack because he's like, he remembers good old Roosevelt, his dog from the past. Mm-hmm. It's so great.
And I love the line in this episode, too. Oh, we'll get there in a second. But I love it. So honestly, this is one of my favorite episodes.
It just keeps getting better.
It does. It really does. Yeah. Like the more time you spend with these characters, the more fleshed out they become, the more realistic they feel, and the more just nuance you can kind of pick up on. And
fleshed
this conversation
out is a very
kind
strange
of...
choice of words.
But this conversation really kind of helps you know, kind of accentuate all of those points. I mean, the way that Walton Goggins just kind of slowly creeps out, you know, the information, lets out, you know, what he wants them to know, and Then holds up this letter with a bullet hole and just blood splatter. Like,
now,
and that's it. That's the information you get that, killed somebody.
I did find it a little coincidental that he shot the hole in the place where the location was, so he couldn't read it.
True, that did feel very coincidental, but at the same time, I feel like that was a lot less of the actual location is on the letter itself, and more of, all right, I know who this is, now I'm going to go find out more information.
Because he says, I can't quite make out the by the time I got to it, mm-hmm. I couldn't quite make out the location.
Mm-hmm. Well, think about it. Again, he's an actor. It's mm-hmm. a prop.
Even though,
it's
haven't
just
there
for dramatic effect?
Yes, I think exactly. I think it's just more for dramatic effect than taking it literally, personally. Sure. Or maybe not.
Have there not been advertisements of the Griffith Observatory? This is where Moldova is.
Moldaver?
Moldaver, yeah.
Moldaver. That isn't that a country?
I think so.
Maybe.
Are you talking about Malbec Moldaver. Whiskey?
Maybe that too.
but that's the thing. That's what I don't know about Moldaver is, and we talked about this in earlier episodes, like she is kind of teased as this, you know, ultimate big bad, this, you know, she's up on this, you know, pinnacle of badassery, and she's this warlord that everybody knows and everybody fears, but nobody knows where she is. At the same time. So it's like, I mean, kind of, you know, you're picking and choosing which direction you want to go with this plot hole little bit.
I mean, we'll get to it in the finale, but I have problems with Moldaver as the main villain. She's not a true villain in my head.
Exactly. I think you're right. I think she's teased as a villain and she's not really a villain.
Yeah.
And maybe that is the answer to all of the issues I have with her. Possibly, but
anyway, so
back to the conversation. I love it because, again, all of this information comes out, but again, the ghoul is still two steps ahead, right? Mm-hmm. He's still like, all right, I'm not even going to get up, or I'm not going to leave. I'm going to get up and I'm going to, you know, say my piece, but we all know this isn't over. He knows this isn't over, you know, as much as the father is pleading, hey, just let it go, move on, which is a wild stance for a father to take after, you know, learning that his other son has, you know, been killed, been murdered by the dude standing in front of you. Mm. But then, of course, his younger son being the hothead, hey, I'm going to do what I got to do.
Always got to have a hot-headed son, don't you?
Always got to have a hot-headed son, for real. But yeah, he pulls a Hateful Eight, and he reaches for the gun and gets shot. And again, just badass. Badassery coming from the ghoul, from Walton Goggins.
Yep.
But the score also, I got to mention, in this scene in particular, like it moves. It's so fluid from like wiry and eerie and kind of amping mm-hmm. up, right, the suspense. And then just like immediately shifts like this somber and remorseful tone, but like without skipping a beat and without making it feel like cheesy or overly overdone.
Because in the second half of this show, we've been peeling back the layers of Coop, the mm-hmm. ghoul, and finding the true humanity inside him,
mm-hmm.
and it's especially in these last two episodes,
mm-hmm.
Where we really see where his true motivation is.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Or you know, we're starting to peel back that, you know, where is it mm-hmm. is it coming from?
And yeah,
it starts to kind of spiral a little bit for him.
I mean, he's going like full rampage at a point.
Yes, exactly. And then, you know, so to kind of jump into that, then we get back to the past. And of course, then young Moldaver is giving this lecture about how the end of the world is a product and all that's bad and, you know, boo capitalism, which, of course, you know, you should feel bad about it and you should feel a certain way about it. But of course, it's right. It's just this lecture. Like, she knew Cooper was coming. She knew that he was on his way. So she kind of tailored this conversation for him.
Yeah. Isn't it kind of ironic that they wrote that kind of speech in the show?
Yes.
When it's being produced by Amazon.
Yes. Yes. I mean, was it the last episode or the one before where we have?
Oh yeah, we had them waxing poetic about just being products.
Right. The end of the world is a product.
There's a ton of commentary on capitalism in this. In this episode.
Yeah. Oh, there's a ton of commentary, but you're right. It is. There is definitely deep-seated irony in this coming from one of the biggest corporations in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But also, for some reason, they let these guys kind of run with it. So, I don't know. Are corporations really all that evil?
Depends on what they're doing with all that money.
Wiping their ass with it is what they're doing.
See, that bothers me. Because I could use that money. I mean, hell, you know what? Still give it to me.
I don't care. Gross.
Well, you got to remember, no villain is a villain in their own mind.
Right.
So,
oh, right. And that kind of leads into Moldaver, and that leads into...
Well, that was a direct line from Cooper. That was a direct line that he says, was it in this episode or was it in the finale? I don't know. I watched these back to back, so
yeah,
I was
same.
Very...
Yeah, same here.
It kind of blended together for me, but...
We all watched them back to back.
Great.
We might as well just record it as one.
Honestly, for real. Well, maybe we will. So anyway, we'll see. We'll see how quickly we can get through seven. But of course, right. So Moldaver, of course, she knows Barbara Howard. She knows his wife. She in some way, shape, or form. So that's kind of just hinted at that maybe she doesn't know her personally, but she knows of her. I don't know. But so she gives Coop this listening device, right, to spy on her. And immediately, like he doesn't throw it in her face. He doesn't tell her to fuck off. Right. He kind of takes a second, goes, I actually think I'm going to do this before saying, all right, good day, here, have this back.
Yeah, he's definitely conflicted, but they've done a good job in the previous episodes of motivating him to actually take that listening device.
Yeah,
because with all that he has dealt with, like being a soldier to now this actor to now just the poster boy of Vault-Tec.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, plus things that he's been hearing from his wife.
Yeah.
Recently, before this.
That's like the main catalyst right there. I mean, when she's saying like they can't bring the dog, he's like, says who?
Right.
He's not like attacking her. He's like, you're in charge here, lady. Like, his wife is in charge. She has every right to be like, no, pets are allowed.
Yeah. Yeah. Or to, you know, fight against it at the very least.
At the very least. But I think this is also the intro to Bud. We've been hearing about him, and we've
kind
seen
of the intro. I mean,
of him, but now we're like getting a full scene with him.
I think. We've had conversations with Bud, or Cooper's had conversations with Bud.
Conversations
in the past,
where Coop is literally just kind of waving Bud off.
True.
He's like, I don't have time for.
Yes.
You.
No. Exactly. Yeah. This. You're right. This is the first time where he's really actually like a character and not a side piece. Absolutely.
And he's so trying hard to be Don Draper from Mad Men. But
very much so.
I would
very
much rather prefer Don Draper because Don Draper, he's only trying to sell cigarettes. Bud here is trying to sell the end of the world with Bud's Buds.
Bud's Buds. I do like, before we get to Bud's Buds, I really like...
Because it's important.
It's very important. But I like... It was so quick, I didn't catch it the first time I watched the series, about when young Moldaver is, or whatever her name is in the past, is she's talking to Cooper about the company she worked for and why she doesn't like Vault-Tec and why she's trying to kind of infiltrate their system.
Yeah.
Is because they bought up the company that was working on cold fusion.
Robco.
Yeah, was it Robco?
I believe.
I don't think so, because Robco's right there in cahoots.
Yeah, he's
with,
in the
with
war room.
I think it's just an unnamed, you know, research company that is like on the verge of a breakthrough.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we can't have any kind of, you know, unlimited power because you can't market
that,
right?
She
you can't
seems
capitalize
like
that.
She seems like the Tesla to their Edison.
Okay.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
I think you're absolutely right.
I thought
about
you were
that.
About to say Tesla, like. The car.
Like the Tesla company.
Once you mentioned Edison, I'm like, oh, makes perfect sense.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right.
Which is why she wanted the cold fusion at, we'll get there, obviously, but at the end, she wants the cold fusion so she can give electricity back to everybody. And can you imagine what it's like in the hands of somebody like the Brotherhood, which I know we'll touch on again later.
Those of us that worked on Friday already got an example of what it's like to not have power or access to the internet.
Yeah.
it didn't affect me, so I just laughed at a bunch of the memes. So.
I was working customer service at Charles Schwab, and it was just all day.
Couldn't do anything.
All of our systems were down.
Love that.
Oh, it was great.
Bite the bullet and take the day off. Oh, well.
Oh,
everyone go
man.
Home.
I should've.
Everyone go home.
Yeah. Except for those that are at the airport.
Everyone go home.
Everyone!
10
points if you get that reference.
I'm sure I would. If I thought about it hard enough.
Gary Oldman.
Nope, didn't get it.
Leon the Professional.
Nope. Sorry, haven't seen it. Yeah, oh well.
Yeah, you're on your own, buddy.
Wow. No, I'm not. I'm sure there's going to be someone in the audience, or the other Matt and Jeff will definitely get the reference.
Okay.
Someone will get the reference.
Somebody out there, just write in and say, hey, I got the reference.
Screaming into the void here.
Somebody give Matt some validation.
All right. So back in Vault 4, Lucy's being interrogated by the Cyclops and Cher. And
Cher.
She does look like Cher.
She does. And the actress's name is Cher.
Yeah.
Which that's just even more
ironic. Blows my mind. But I want to point out that when they have her watch the video and the black and white video from like the early days of the vault.
Oh, that was given the video game.
That was definitely 100% given the video game aesthetic. But it also, that was the scientist from the commercial that Cooper was just promoting when we met Bud Askins the first time. That's that scientist, right? Because he was in Vault 4, and they were working on how human DNA reacts to radioactive elements.
Yeah, because he says in the war room, that was his pitch.
Yeah. It brings a full circle.
What he said something about like testing mutant genes or something
to see how certain genes would react to radioactivity.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which is it gives us a whole new light on Vault 4 because that's where we're at with the Cyclops, Chris Parnell, and it while they're still messed up in their own way, you can't help but feel bad for them. Because they only recently kind of overthrew the scientists and are like, we're finally free.
I think so, or maybe not even super recent. I mean, maybe recently is a relative term.
Recently enough to where it is so fresh in their minds. I mean, it's not even a generation away.
And I love how non-violent of a cult they are.
That is a creepy fucking cult.
That was creepy, a really creepy cult. When they started stripping down and drinking the blood, I'm like, oh my god,
that's just a regular Friday night for me.
I mean, even after that, like what? Later in this episode,
so that's a regular Friday night for me.
What does Creed say? I've been part of many cults, some as a leader, some as a follower. You have more sex as a follower, but you make more money as a leader.
The axolotl that's in that video, though, is it the same one that Lucy came across?
I doubt it.
I don't think so, but it's definitely the beginnings of a gulper, as they put it. So,
right.
Yeah, the gulper.
It's possible it could be the one that bumped up against the glass.
So my question is just, why not give us something fresh, a different kind of abomination than just the same axolotl gulper creature?
Budget? Money?
Yeah,
you still gotta put money into making it again,
or just hammering home the fact that hey, humans created this.
Yeah,
that it isn't a product of the wasteland; it's a product of what Vault Tech has done.
Are axolotls native to California?
I don't think they're native to Earth.
No, they are.
All those glasses. Yeah.
Okay. You look that up. You find out. But what I want to say is, or what I want to talk about a little bit is, Matt, not only does it kind of show everything that you were talking about, but it also shows the darkness of Vault Tech. Again, like you have this on the surface, hey, we're working on, you know, what radioactive elements do to human DNA. But it's so much darker when you actually get to the nitty gritty of how they're going to go about doing that.
Well, and I love that this... She only got part of the story before, and then she acted on it. And this isn't the first time. Yep. We've only seen part of a story.
Yep.
And as we come to a conclusion in the season, we get that again.
Yes. Yes. And again, just hounding home, Lucy, you don't know fucking shit. You don't know what you're talking about. And
she
I love that
so
line.
Sheltered.
I love the line by Cher is, you know, your ignorance cannot excuse your cruelty. Because they talk about, right? So, of course, not everything seems the way that it does on the surface. And yes, that is a pun. But people are just trying to get by and make do with what they have left after what they were forced into.
Yeah.
And Lucy still doesn't think that there's an experiment going on in 33. Like, that's what's even crazier. Yeah. It's like, hey, well, what experiment is going on in your vault? Because these vault dwellers, at this point in time, for however many years they've known... they've known about what Vault-Tec is doing, right?
Yeah.
32 figured out what Vault-Tec was doing.
Mm-hmm.
Lucy is still, again, just at this point, she's like trying to be ignorant. She almost like willingly doesn't want to find out.
But we still don't know what the experiment is.
Well, right. Of course we don't, but that's, you know, narratively. But Lucy, like, has so many opportunities to go, okay, what are you talking about? Sit down and let's figure this out. And she's like willfully, like, I'm not going to ask any questions. I'm not going to find out. I don't want to know, because every time I find out more about this world, it's worse and worse and worse.
Yeah.
But I love that, you know, again, that the other vaults, at least, you know, the couple other vaults that we've been to know about what's going on. And they ask her point blank, and she's like, I don't know. There isn't an experiment. I don't know what you're talking about. And they kind of share this look, right? They have this, should we tell her? Should we not? And all right, we're just going to move on and, you know, I guess act like not necessarily like everything didn't happen, but we're just going to move on and continue with taking care of it how we see fit.
It's interesting. It's very similar to, like, if you were to tell, I mean, to bring it into real events, you know, just with what happened 2 weeks ago, we had a assassination attempt, and within minutes, everyone was like, oh, it's going to be, oh, this is all staged, this is one thing or another. And it's like, even when facts start coming out, honest to God facts, there's people that are just so willfully ignorant because it doesn't fit their narrative.
Yes.
And it doesn't fit how they feel.
That's been going on for a while now, I feel like.
Absolutely. But just to give a very recent example.
Yeah.
And that's definitely what Fallout is trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
Cognitive dissonance?
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, you could be staring the truth in the face and still be like, no, the sky is green.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. I mean, it brings to mind the Mark Twain quote of it's easier to fool people than convince them that they've been fooled. Right. Like, that's the whole almost the theme of this episode. Almost, you know, one of the running themes of this show.
Absolutely.
That, you know, is, again, a commentary, especially how pertinent it is right now with everything going on in the world in America right now.
Yeah.
Is again, it's easier to fool Lucy clearly than to prove to her that she's been fooled for her whole life, because again, she's fighting it at every single step until finally, when we get to the final episode,
it starts to peel back layers on her own father too.
Yeah,
because he was overseer of 33.
Yeah,
came from 31.
She doesn't know that.
She doesn't know it yet.
She doesn't know that
yet.
Mm-hmm.
But
so okay, so back up at the surface, Thaddeus's dragon, again, that giant bag for the entire direction. What is in that fucking bag? I need to know.
Parts.
Because even one of the other soldiers just
food,
pukes in it.
Rations.
I guess, but
tools.
It's an open golf bag. That's a dumb.
Yeah, but squires back in the medieval times used to lug around
golf clubs.
He's a giant caddy.
Giant bags of you know, armor, of weapons, of rations, whatever you need on the road, because you don't know what you're going to run into. You don't know what's gonna become scarce.
You never know what you're gonna get.
Thank you, Forrest.
Sorry, but that actually leads us to one of my favorite cameos of this show.
Thaddeus?
With Thaddeus on the road, yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yes. So, the Red Rocket Station, I love that, just because it's
great,
a call to Fallout 4,
great,
and, you know, a good way for the ghoul to pick up his companion later on.
Yep.
But we get more with Thaddeus, more comedy.
His fucking foot?
His fucking foot looked
great.
That happens first, yeah.
Yes, yeah.
That was so gross, but then he gets... Wait, what is the name of that actor that plays the supposed doctor?
The snake oil salesman guy.
Salesman. Oh my god, he's so gross.
I had written it down.
You know who I'm talking about.
I know exactly who you're talking about. You'll have to bear with me because IMDb just refreshed. So bear with me momentarily. John Daly. John Daly plays the snake oil salesman.
Been almost.
Well, okay, so we haven't got there. Sorry, just quite yet, because I want to go back. These two episodes, there's a lot of editing. There's a lot of cutting. There's a lot of storylines that are revolving and spinning all over the place. And then we get, you know, Well, I promise we'll get there. But yeah, so we get some comedy with Thaddeus back in Vault 4. This is what I was talking about, is this cult is fucking terrifying. Like they're just chanting and clapping all in unison, but they're not really chanting. Like, what are they chanting?
I also want to, I know we touched on it, but I wanted to, for those who haven't played the video game very much, I wanted to say that this is exactly how information is found out in the games. There's not a lot of people in vaults. You usually find out through videos that you find in the vaults, as Lucy's doing here. So another just great Easter egg in reference to the games.
Yeah.
And then, then we cut back to the cult, and they're super creepy.
Super creepy, super creepy. But again, we get one of the greatest comedic timings of the entire series, definitely of this episode.
Chris Parnell just delivers.
He's such a veteran in this medium, and it's just so much fun to watch him just run. And you give him this wild premise, and you know that he just was like, "Absolutely, I'm going to eat this shit up." It's like, just again, we hereby sentence you to death by banishment to the service. And then just sawing with this dull blade.
Oh, God. That was probably my favorite part. I was cackling.
Just and to go 2 weeks of supplies.
Yes, someone will carry this to the service for you. And it's time to be moving along.
Yeah.
All of it. Every ounce I can get of Chris Parnell.
They're right.
It
is still a death sentence, but they're going to give him 2 weeks.
Yeah. We'll give you a little fighting chance.
We'll help you leave, but leave.
This is an optimistic way of looking at it, because you'll be killed almost immediately.
I guess it shows what they think of the surface level, right, of the surface, and which isn't, they don't know much.
No. Right, which is interesting because they take in surfies all the time.
Yeah.
That's not a good word.
Why? You can't use that word.
That's their word.
That's their word.
And he said it with a hard F, too.
How dare you accuse me of
something?
Well,
remember, Chris Parnell says it first, and then he's like, "I can't say that anymore because of re-election."
I know.
I just want to keep gushing about Chris Parnell for a minute, because
it's hard not to.
His performance in the last episode and this one are so perfectly cast.
Like, all right, favorite Chris Parnell role/movie?
Oh, gosh.
I got to go Anchorman, personally.
I'm gonna say Dr. Spaceman.
Yeah, that was gonna be mine. He gets so many good, just great, wild lines in 30 Rock. Hard not to love him in that. And I since you took that, that would have been my pick. I'm gonna go Rick and Morty.
Yeah,
like, he's great as Jerry.
I would say Cyril. He's great as Cyril in Archer.
Mm-hmm.
Suppressing fire.
But cool. I mean, he came from one of the greatest casts of Saturday Night Live.
That's true.
And learned from, they all learned from each other.
Yeah, yeah. But he was able to hone his craft to the point where it's rumored that he wants to do multiple takes for his voiceover work, but they never use the second take. They love his first take so much. Yeah, this is rumored on Rick and Morty, specifically Rick and Morty, where he does multiple takes, but they love his first take so much. They're like, screw it, let's just do it.
Hey, makes for an easy day, I guess, right?
Yeah.
When you're so dialed into a character.
You always have to do multiple takes when it comes to voiceovers, but it's still just, it cracks me up, though, that the writers and voice directors are just like, no, that first one was just spot on. Like, that's exactly what we're wanting.
How do you do it? Oh, that's great. That's great. And then, of course, Max sees Lucy, who sees Lucy getting dragged by, which I love that he has to think about it for a second. He kind of is like, oh, but waterfall. And it's fine. And grabs a handful of popcorn and then goes off and saves her.
In his robe. But then he goes,
that's fantastic,
steals their power for his suit.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And a great entrance. Just march.
That led me to a question about the Brotherhood. Is are all their horror fusion power, did they all come from vaults? Did they steal them from other vaults? Have they raided other vaults?
They probably started that way just to get moving, but then they're taking relics back to try and reverse engineer it.
Well, and because I don't remember what the lore is behind Fusion Core, and we'll get to the scene here in a second.
It's
but
so
they're rare
in their world.
Like it's they're super rare.
Oh, well, I mean, okay, it before the end of the world, they were really common.
Yes, I think so.
Well, yeah, it was in your car. It was
right,
in your
right.
Home.
You're right.
Like, it was all powered cities. So,
but if the Brotherhood's been around for how long, like
100 years, 50 years,
so 200? I'm sure that these
not quite.
Oh, they say like 150 years. I think.
You think so? But all I know is that Lucy doesn't know about them, so she's been sheltered. So, regardless of whether Vault 33 knows about them or whether her information is obviously not accurate. I don't know. That's the only thing I'm going off of is our main character doesn't know about them. So I was thinking it's got to be at least a little bit older than that.
Yeah.
Because besides the snake oil salesman says you don't come across them very often anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering how many they've stolen from people like this.
I wouldn't be surprised if it's all the time.
I wouldn't put it past it at all.
But they're also struggling if you don't see them much anymore.
Right. Right. Exactly.
It's a lot of dynasties that are kind of on their last leg. Like, they're all looking desperately for that cold fusion.
Yeah. I mean, everyone could desperately use cold fusion. Mm-hmm. That's the thing, is everyone needs it.
Everyone needs it, but not everyone wants to share it.
Exactly. War never exactly. changes. So I love that, again, Max comes out of the power armor. He's so all about, just tearing it up and saving her. And he doesn't see, right? He's blinded by, but also is a bit of a commentary on the savior complexes because he's blinded by what he thinks he's supposed to
be. The black savior complex.
Get out. I swear to God.
It's not like that, Luke. And you know it. But it's very reminiscent of his first trip in the suit where he stops that one guy from beating up the other dude, and he's like, he keeps fucking my chickens.
Right.
Oh, sorry.
Right. Well, but I mean, kind of what Lucy did earlier is like she only got a little piece of information and ran with it, and it wasn't even close to being correct.
Yeah.
So, again, it's just very interesting, these two characters, how they're written. But I love the conversation right after, which, again, another great comedic bit. Oh, sorry. And then they're riding the elevator up together. But the conversation right after they get out of the vault.
I love that trope.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Awkward elevator scenes are the best.
They're some of the best.
I think one of the best ones is in one of the worst movies.
Which one?
The live action the Michael Bay TMNT.
Oh, I know what
that
you're talking about.
Awkward elevator ride, but then they start like, coming up with their own beat. And then when the bell goes ding, they're like,
my favorite is still Spider-Man.
Cool Spidey outfit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it kind of rides up the crotch a bit, but
make it yourself?
Yeah.
Cool. I really like the one in the Cabin in the Woods. That's a great one. It's a great pause before the very final battle.
Definitely.
Every time I hear an elevator bell ding, I'm just waiting for like a flood of creatures to come out now.
I keep waiting for that show to be turned into that movie to be turned into a show.
I know.
If you listen to our
episode, which is an episode that I can't remember exactly what it is, we do talk about that. And I remember finding some research about there was talk about doing it, or they were going to try and do it, or it got started and then canceled.
Maybe a mini series. I wouldn't want like multi-season show. I want like a limited series.
Did you see their board? They have so many ideas.
I get that, but if every episode is just going to be your monster of the week,
you could take a American Horror Story approach and make it an anthology.
There's that, but I think it would get too old too fast. I would love to see like a series that's just about those guys and how it affects them until the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that would be fascinating because it's like, forget about the teenagers in the cabin. Like, let's put all of our focus on these guys and what they have to do to wrangle these creatures, what they have to do to keep it quiet for everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that would be so fascinating. And then you can have the horror elements of like you know,
yeah,
between or like in between all that.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, we're back at the surface now. Yes.
I was looking for our Cabin in the Woods episode. That's episode 70, Cabin in the Spooky Season, if anyone wants to listen to that. Anyway, yeah, so we're back at the surface, and I love this conversation because like Lucy like is again kind of goes along with it, and then like her conscience catches up with her and she stops and she's like, we can't go, right? Because you can't be a knight if you're killing people, you know, if you're willingly and knowingly killing people.
Yeah, willfully. where's the nobility?
Where's your nobility, right? Yeah. Exactly. Like you can't be who you say you are if this is how you're gonna act. And I think that is what unlocks what happens right after Max gives his core back. I think that is why he actually says what he's, you know, reveals what he does. I really do, because he kind of considers that, like, I really do need to do the right thing. And this is truly the right thing, even if it makes it harder for me, if it makes it harder for the one who I care about and who I want, you know, to succeed.
It's his Finn moment where he gets to show that he actually is brave, that he actually is capable of doing the right thing rather than just looking good.
Right. Plus,
did you like him in that moment, Matt?
You know, the last few episodes, Maximus finally grows on me.
Yeah.
We told you he would. That's his arc, buddy.
You know,
he needs an arc.
You weren't wrong.
But also, what this conversation does is it presents Lucy with the moral question. You know, are you sure you want to do this if it means you might not find your dad?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, this is a clear path to be able to go and do what you need to do.
Yeah.
And so again, she's morally strong in her resolve. I don't know, whatever I'm trying to say. She's
resolute.
Yeah, she understands what she wants to do, and she sticks to it. Period.
It's the golden rule. It always comes back to the golden rule for her.
For her, exactly.
Up till the end.
So again,
we'll talk about it.
Reluctantly, Max does do the right thing. But he leaves his power armor just out in the fucking open like that. Like, what the hell, guys?
He can't move it. He took the power out of it.
I know, but what was he somewhere?
Oh, he like park it and then...
Yeah, exactly. Park it somewhere. Put
it back in the vault, I guess, the people in...
At least you know it's safe.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have issue with it being right out in the open with him making such a big deal about it being in the open and then getting his ass kicked trying to get it back. Like, it's just, again, character arc, whatever. I'm just irritated by it.
Right in front of your vault would kind of be a deterrent, I think.
I don't think so. I think it'd be like, oh, shit, they clearly... have a knight in there. We're going to go fuck him up. Anyway, they disagree. It's fine. Whatever.
I
don't know,
but I love the little little vault dweller who's like, thank you.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. That reminded me of SpongeBob, actually.
Wait, how?
When SpongeBob, he gets stuck in the dark place.
Rock bottom.
Rock bottom. When he gets stuck at rock bottom and he's floating up. You're welcome. Just totally.
That is a truly, truly classic episode.
It's a great, great episode.
Gloves for my glove action figure.
So then Lucy invites, again, so she's still torn up, right? Because she knows how much, and I love how she, before Max came and destroyed everything, how she pleaded. She's like, you know, can he stay? He needs this. I know, you know, I would like him with me, but he clearly, like, this is the place he belongs. Just take him. He'll be great.
And he's loving it, too.
Like, and he's loving it. And he would, you know, he would have loved it the entire time. I think he would have. But then, so right afterwards, like, she feels torn up about that. So she's like, hey, when we figure this out, come live with me, right? And she proposes to him, which is, you know, good for her. It's not a very decent proposal, but she proposes at least, hey, come live with me, you know, or come live with us.
Did you say it's an indecent proposal?
Hey.
I was just going to make that joke, but.
You were too late.
Beat you to the punch.
I'm better than that. No, I'm not. I'm not above it.
And so originally I thought that act of kindness made Max break, but I really think it came from before, and then this kind of solidified it. He's like, I gotta tell her. I've gotta finally reveal who I am. You know, I can't be a knight. Because I'm just not.
Can't be a knight if you're a liar.
Mm-hmm.
You have to feel like a knight within.
It was inside him all along.
Aww.
Yeah.
Gross.
And who we found along the way.
But I mean, she immediately forgives him. Like, she kind of does like a little bit of a double take and is like, ah, fuck. I trusted you and I totally thought, ah, you're cute enough. It's fine.
Right before that, when she asked him to move into the vault with her, I'm like, wow, she moves so fast. What, they've known each other for a week?
Well, exactly. A couple hours ago, she just out of the blue asked him if he wanted to fuck.
1950s mentality, though.
Right.
That was so common back in those
but
days.
A week?
Sure.
You'd be surprised, dude.
Sure.
You would be so surprised.
I guess. And if there's not like a ton of people, like you don't really have much of a choice.
Right.
You find someone you connect with. I guess you just got to hop, jump it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Jump on it. Jump their bones.
Jump around. Seriously,
no.
Get up, get down.
So now we're getting to probably our collective favorite scene in the entire series, right? Like this snake oil scene.
Oh, the snake oil scene.
It's one of my favorites. Because I love leading up to it. I love that Thaddeus is listening to the radio and it's fucking fiddle week. That is hilarious.
It took me a minute to recognize the voice, and it wasn't until I saw the face.
Exactly. I didn't get the voice until the reveal. Melipnos? We'll get there.
What?
Melipnos.
But he's walking by and oh shit, remember, as much fun as we're having, this shit is fucking dark because this dude's about to fucking kill himself.
Yeah.
He's about to off himself and then sees someone, which he just, I don't know, just decides, hey, it's better to try and sell somebody something than kill myself.
Yeah.
Which is great. Good for him.
Well, you got nothing to live for. Now you have something to live for.
Yeah. But I love John Dale again, just reprising his role in this first season, because his mannerism, his drunken stumble, his gait, like just all of it, like the way he talks, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
But also I found it interesting. So Thaddeus, you know, trusts this guy because he's right now to trust him once they get into his office or into that
office,
quote unquote office, exactly. But why would you then put your gun down and say, okay, why on the other side would you then give the actual serum that would help somebody to somebody who was just pointing a gun at you? Like from both sides, it seems very untrustworthy and yet they both go along.
Could go either way, but I think they decided to go with the comedy of like, yeah, we'll go ahead and trust each other.
Mm-hmm.
It's still a wasteland. And so, you know, something goes wrong, you could still die while they're still living, and they could shoot you once they realize they're drinking poison.
Mm-hmm.
If they have enough time, that is.
I think he knows that he has a chance of dying either way.
Yeah.
So he just decides to
roll the dice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess.
It's to just the most grotesque scene.
It really is, right? But again, remember, one of the snake oil salesman's very last lines from episode 2, I believe, was serums to heal your feet.
Yep. Mm.
Just want to point that. Remember that. Remember, I called that out.
Nice.
This is Tarantino's favorite scene.
So then we get the reveal that the fusion core, right? Yeah, maybe that's what it was. Maybe it was getting a fusion core is what changed the doc's tune.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, okay, Gore solidified his decision to actually help Thaddeus and not kill him. And then there's a little hint, little hint of foreshadowing after, you know, he gets all
drugged up
and healed up. And then, you know, Doc is off and, whimsically, you know, strolls away. And he's like, yeah, just go to Shady Sands, basically, you know, to find the radio tower. And he's like, that's radioactive as fuck. Like, I don't want to go there. And he's like, you're never going to have to worry about that again. And I didn't catch that the first time. Like, again, there's a little bit of that foreshadowing that you catch more things more times you watch stuff.
Yeah. Which, again, your favorite scene is with the snake oil salesman.
Yeah,
my favorite scene is... following that with our Fiddle Week radio show host.
Oh, okay, cool, cool. We haven't got there just yet. We haven't got there just yet. Great scene.
So excited.
Great fucking scene. Great. All right, we'll get there. Because I want to talk about Back in 33, because, again, we get the song, What a Difference a Day Makes. Again, we get that. But this time, the Raiders are dead. Somebody has poisoned the Raiders.
Who did it?
I don't know. Who did it?
The Broncos.
Who?
The Raiders versus the Broncos.
That's what I thought you said.
Oh, the Broncos wouldn't be able to do that. They just... It's not that they don't have it in them. It's just they suck.
They don't have anyone to, you know, take the lead and tell them to do that.
No, it's just there would always be a flag on every single play.
Yeah.
Sports talk on a movie podcast.
That's the sweet spot we live in, buddy. If you haven't listened to this podcast yet, you don't know what you're listening to. Trust me, most of our intros for the first, I don't know, half of the time we've been doing this were football related, because, you know, fantasy's coming up too. So speaking
I'll wait until September when hockey season starts up again. Thank you very much.
Speaking of fantasy, don't forget to listen in. I don't know when this episode's coming out. Either we may have done it, we may not have, but we got our Johnny Depp draft coming up, so I'll talk to you guys about that off air.
Okay.
Anyway,
for it.
little tease for everybody. So they've been poisoned with rat poison. It's not revealed who did it, but the way that Betty strolls out of that little waiting area with that grin on her face, man, that sure does look a little suspicious.
Betty reminds me a little more of Betty is a blind owl, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. She's reminding me a little more of Amanda Waller from Suicide Squad.
Okay.
Yeah. They have very similar
dispositions.
Thank you. Yeah. They know how to play the game politically, and they know how to get their hands dirty when it's time to get their hands dirty.
Yeah, but, and I mean, the line that she throws back in Norm's face, that your words have, was your words carry meaning?
Yeah,
or,
you remember what I said?
Your words have weight.
Carry weight, your word, you know.
Just like your father.
Because I think she's grinning because Norm has put himself in a position where he could look like he was the one who did it.
Yeah.
Or just guilt him for, you know, like, hey, there's blood on your hand. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're the one who did this because...
Because you found out our little secret.
Well, exactly. Or because you influenced somebody to do this. That's what I think. Yeah. That's what that line meant is this isn't my fault. This is on you because you are the one who is against the Raiders being here in the first place. So clearly...
Yeah, but if it is her fault...
Well, she's just taking his word to heart, you know, being a good leader and listening to her people.
She
wouldn't do
that. What a good leader.
She wouldn't do that.
I love the leader.
I love the leader. No, 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 leader.
No, 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 leader.
Leader.
Leader?
Batman. I mean, leader.
But I also love the line over the intercom. I'm just going to move on.
The line on the intercom, yes.
Where it's, remember, wherever you end up, that's where you belong. I love that. It gets so totalitarian. Like,
oh, yeah.
You have no choice. You have no free will. You have no, you know, say in the matter. Now, it's wherever we tell you to go is where you are going to be.
Oh, okay. So this is when they're assigning everyone.
Yes,
to,
which is also an amazing graphic that they put up on everybody with a little clink, blink, blink. And the 32 versus 33, you know, on everyone's and everyone's reactions coming through. I had the patriotic music coming as the assignments are doled out.
I love that, but I also love the looks on some of their faces.
Yes.
I think it's people that know
their reactions.
That know what could happen in 32.
I guess. I don't know.
I just don't.
We don't know exactly how Vault 32 got eliminated, but we know something happened.
Right.
And there was some sort of rebellion, and they were put down.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And when I saw one of the reactions, it was one of the guys that was running against Betty, when he's like, oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, does he know what happened there? Like,
no,
really
Wally has no idea.
Woody.
Okay. Woody has no idea.
He just knows that they got eliminated.
He doesn't know anything.
Oh, so he just doesn't want to move.
Exactly.
Because I thought it was like a sense of dread.
Well, it's probably like some innate sense that something is not right here.
Well, okay. Did they ever lie and say 32 is still okay, even though there were just raiders that came from 32 in the very beginning?
I mean, all we saw was the dead cornfield.
Right.
But everything else was painted over and brand new and spick and span.
That's true.
So maybe? I mean, we're assuming that I think that if anything was talked about or if anything was discussed, it was, hey, the Raiders killed all of 32 and then came to 33.
Yeah, so maybe it's a fear of that might happen again.
That's what I was trying to get at, yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah maybe. I would.
So anyway, that was weird.
If he doesn't know the dark truth, he is still very weary. He doesn't want to have to put in all the extra effort for security. And
sure, or start over. Or right? Think about, going to a new school. Yeah. And having to make new friends and having to figure out,
is life or death
society.
At this point.
Basically.
You guys didn't get my reference.
What was your reference?
I said, anyway, that was weird. It's a direct quote from Woody in that scene when he's like freaking out and then then he takes a step back and he's like, oh, that was weird. Sorry, that was weird.
Oh, of course. You're right. Yep. Way over my head.
These guys weren't paying attention.
Who are you?
We're watching Fallout. This is the episode, The Radio.
Radio.
I like that movie, Cuba Gooding Jr. That's what we're talking about, right?
Yes.
Before we get to that, before we leave the vault and come back, I want to just mention one of my favorite lines in this episode, and honestly in the whole series, is when Norm goes to Chet and finds out, hey, he's going to 32, and they have this little conversation, right? Norm's almost berating him for going to 32 and not standing up for himself and not, saying, hey, I'm not moving, because of course Betty would split up the dynamic duo, right? He would, obviously knew that they were up to something and obviously knew where they were coming
from. Well, that's why you have Chet's new
Birdie.
So
maybe Betty sent Birdie to Chet in the first place.
Maybe. Stephanie.
Steffi.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm looking at the wrong.
Yes. But, I love Steffi. That conversation because, again, it's like, hey, you're just going to go along with this after everything we found out. You're not going to say anything. You're not going to change. Norm actually says, you're a coward. You know that, right? And Chet's response is golden. We all are. That's why we live in a vault.
Yeah.
Because at least, yes, he understands it, but he's actively, again, not doing anything about it, which is worse or just as bad as, being, completely
ignorant. Ignorance doesn't excuse your cruelty, in this case, your ignorance doesn't excuse your cowardice.
Yes.
Well, and what's funny is that Woody was the other person running.
Yeah.
Overseer
and she
position.
Split those two up.
And she doesn't put him in charge of 32.
Of course not.
After all, it's Steph. Yeah. It's Steppy or Stephanie or whatever.
We find out about Steffi too in the last episode, I'm pretty sure. Well, wasn't she from 31?
So, so back on the surface, right? So we're at the Red Rocket gas station. Yep. And the ghoul finds dog meat. Hooray!
Yay,
which,
poor
again,
dog meat.
Going back to video game references, this is where you find in Fallout 4. It's very early in the game. I don't know if you got that far.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's like the second thing you do.
Yeah.
In Fallout 4, that's where you meet dog meat. That's where you get your first companion. So it's very, just reminiscent of the game and makes everyone feel great for playing it and understanding where that came from. And then we go back in time. Coop is sitting with his dog, right, with Roosevelt, and he's reading a magazine about something, some robotics something.
Robco.
And then he does it. He just makes this decision. He's like, fuck it. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to tune this little earpiece to the, which, by the way, why is Barb not wearing her Pip-Boy? That seems out of character. That seems convenient. I'll have a little issue with that.
They were taking it. She was complaining about it in the exterior scene. So Bud was like, I'll take it to the guys.
No. That's after. That's after.
No, so I think she's wearing the Pip-Boy for appearance's sake only. I mean,
I guess.
Because later on you see her wearing it, but she's only wearing it in certain scenes.
Because,
When she's out in public.
I guess you would consider her back porch public?
No, she's definitely bringing her work into her home.
Exactly. Like, she wears it right after she gets out of the hot tub in one of the scenes and puts it on and just wears it around the house.
It's not something that you wear every single hour of every single day.
It is for the vault dwellers.
For the vault dwellers, but that's just how they advertise it.
Okay.
She's not living the advertisement. It's like a,
I think she
it's
is.
Like a guy selling, well, going back to the Don Draper metaphor, some of the people that are selling cigarettes aren't smokers themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they know.
True, but I think that she at this point.
To keep the brand looking good.
I think at this point she's fully committed and she's fully brainwashed. So anyway, I personally I have issue with that, but it again it affords us everything that moves forward. That's where it was. Is so later, so immediately Cooper regrets his decision, throws out the earpiece, and then later in the night, right? So he's very flip floppy. He's very back and forth with all this. Later in the night, he's watching his own commercial. Mm-hmm. And he's listening to it, and the line that we get is in Vault 4 with that doctor who we just saw got mauled by the axolotl, right? He says, we're specializing in the effects of radiation on human DNA. That's where it was. Sorry, I was trying to find that earlier. That's where it came from, 100%. Mm. And so again, he's not technically lying, but it's just it's so much darker and so much worse than you could ever imagine. And that, I think, is what then kind of triggers Cooper and going, you know what? Fuck this. I do love my dog. I'm going to go back and he's going to dig through the trash and he's going to find the earpiece.
Do we ever find out why they won't allow dogs in the vaults?
Because dogs eat meat.
Yeah.
And it's not efficient.
Oh, okay.
It's not sustainable.
I see.
Which, you know, that
dog
sucks.
Meat. Dog meat. Oh. Dog eats meat. Dog meat. Got it. That's why they call them dog meat.
Da-na-na-na. So, back in the present.
Well, that was weird.
Well, that was weird. Did you get it? Did you get the reference?
No, I wasn't paying attention.
So back in the present.
We're
so
gonna
we get,
move right along then. Well, okay then.
Well, okay then.
Well, all right. Honestly, we smash from Cooper in the past, finding earpiece and committing, hey, I'm gonna find out what the fuck's going on. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna change something. I'm gonna know whatever it is you're not telling me, you're hiding something. I'm
basically
not gonna
be
allow
the
that.
Hero that I am on television and
yes,
film.
Yes. But then so he in the future, right, in or the present, I guess. He's sitting with Dog Meat, and Dog Meat's begging for attention. He's begging for, you know, just acknowledgement that he exists.
Aww.
And the ghoul just, with the most heartbreaking line of the entire series, I'm sorry, Dog Meat, but you ain't him.
You ain't him.
You ain't him.
So,
because there's only one, he only has place in his heart for one dog.
I really connect with that line today. It's 1 year anniversary of when my miniature Yorkie passed away last year, and our other dog Grim, who's he's a flat-coated retriever, came up to me, and I was like, it was right after I watched this episode too. So, I was like, I'm sorry,
it was very apropos.
You ain't him. No, but I love perfect. Both of my boys.
Awesome, I love that. So
but yeah, no, it's a great line, and he delivers it so well.
Absolutely.
And it just, again, and it really, with that one line, really gives the ghoul depth.
Yeah.
And more depth than we've seen.
And we see that there's still a part of him that is still human.
Yeah.
Yep, exactly. And then we get to your favorite scene.
Yes.
We come back because, honestly, we wax poetic about how great Chris Parnell was of casting. We love Chris Parnell, Ella Purnell. We love Walton Goggins. We love all this. Mm-hmm. But I think the best casting is fucking Fred Armisen.
Yep.
Malipnos.
As the Malipnos. DJ.
Malipnos.
Is just, I don't know if
him.
I can explain it. But just his mannerisms, his goofiness, his acting resume, like all the roles he's played.
It's really a caricature of who he is
in
real life.
That's it. It's a caricature of Fred Armisen himself,
I
think.
I make the Brooklyn Nine-Nine reference as Malipnos because he does play a fiddle in Brooklyn Nine-Nine as Malipnos.
But in real life, Fred Armisen is very much a music purist. Like
yes,
he believes that vinyl is like the purest form of your sound. Which
and he loves the mids.
And he loves the mids.
Which I'm sure is a Gen Z joke. It has to be, right? Oh, there's the mid.
it's just great seeing him in that role. But and it's a great cameo, but that's actually not the reason why it's my favorite scene.
Why is that?
It's because of what happens right after with Thaddeus. at that same station, because they have a great interaction with each other.
No, absolutely. They do with Thaddeus, and he's like, oh yeah, totally. So people don't like this, and it's all this tinny, just terrible sounding music. Forget the fact that it's fiddle music, right? Yeah. Which is just difficult to listen to as it is. But the fact that it's so warped and it's so it's terrible. What I also love, though, is I love we pull out, right? And he's like, yeah, good job with all these booby traps. And it's just littered with dead bodies. And then the sign outside says no requests.
No requests.
And that, to me, that's Fred Armisen, 100%.
Oh, how much do you want to bet he asked for that to be in the to be on the set, like something that says no requests?
That would be great.
I mean, I feel like it would be that level of collaboration where where they're just like, this is or at least when they were coming up with the character, they definitely had Fred Armisen in mind and just hoped that he was free to do it.
It's Amazon. They can pay him whatever he wants to get him.
They can buy all the records in Portlandia.
they dropped the A-bomb. The Armisen bomb.
So Thaddeus.
F-bomb for Fred. Anyway.
That would have been so much better.
Use Matt's take.
So Thaddeus has reached the radio tower to call the Brotherhood to get help and get the head back to base. And unbeknownst to him, right, there's a tracking chip in the head. So Lucy and Maximus will stroll on up. And I love just fires every single round that he has, and Thaddeus misses every single shot. It's a great visual gag as the two are just standing there, Pulp Fiction-esque, just like.
And then it gets almost Looney Tunes.
Yes. Yes.
With the arrow through Thaddeus' neck.
Oh, my God.
But it's so great because he's like, he's reacting as any normal person would. Like, oh, God, I'm going to die.
Yeah. Why am I not dead?
Why am I not dead? And then he pulls it out and heals and he's like, oh, no. That's what made it my favorite scene. That shot of him with the arrow in his neck. And asking, why am I not dead? And then finally realizing he's a ghoul now.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, no.
Yeah.
It's so great. Oh, and fantastic. That actor, he played that so well. He played it through all those emotions so well for perfect comedic
timing. I'm telling you, man, he might be my favorite character in this whole fucking
I hope he comes
series.
Back in season
exactly.
two.
Exactly. We better get Ghoul Thaddeus.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Better get Ghoul Thaddeus.
Ghoul Coop and Ghoul Thaddeus.
Yeah.
God damn it. If we don't get at least
And then Ghoul Thaddeus becomes Squire for Ghoul.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. He becomes a deputy.
Yeah.
Of sorts.
Lord. Yeah.
Oh,
that might
be great.
But then
somebody shoots the deputy.
This also, but he's not going to shoot the sheriff. So just to confirm, Lucy does not know about the Brotherhood because she's confused. She's confused why they're panicked by the arrival of the Brotherhood and why both Thaddeus and Maximus are both kind of, you know, on edge and like, what do we do? Cause she asks, hey, aren't they the good guys? And Thaddeus, it's a complicated organization.
Yeah.
And then we get, you know, another interesting moment with Maximus and saying, hey, give me the head. It'll slow them down. You can run away. You can go.
I love how he's like, I'm sorry for fucking everything.
So much, right, exactly. No, I'm sorry for a lot of things and it's nice to meet you in pocket. Which I'm glad you like it because I thought that was a very unsatisfying ending. I thought that after everything that they had gone through, after everything that they didn't say to each other.
There's no time.
I know, but that's what I mean. Like, it was very unsatisfying
to me. It's in the subtext.
Nah,
like, you can tell he had so much that he wanted to thank him for, but there's no time.
Yeah.
Fine.
And apologize for.
But
and,
I think he finally understands what it means to be a knight, and then he also does something that's not very knightly, but it's for the right reasons, which was
smashing up the a random head.
Yeah, huh?
And then giving the real head to Lucy.
Yeah.
And aww. Yeah. Then we have a kiss.
I have a kiss.
Yeah. Kiss.
And then, of course, another great visual gag with the two disembodied heads mashing up against each other.
That was just that whole sequence from when we meet Fred Armisen to when they leave was one of my favorite scenes. Just from a comedic standpoint.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, another plot hole I have with an issue I have with this scene in particular is we have at the beginning of the scene,
my favorite scene. You have a plot hole.
I do. I have a couple of them, but I have with this specifically, we have a shot from the helicopter above the radio tower and we can, you know, we can make out the radio tower and you know, the shelter and, you know, bits and pieces, but nobody has a scope. Nobody has any kind of way to see, like, how many people are down there. That feels wrong. Yeah. That doesn't feel, again, yes, it is the wasteland. They're looking for artifacts and all that, but I would feel like they would have some form of, you know, scopes of telescope of some way.
I need you to
seeing.
Get all the way off my back.
Because the plot needs to happen.
So back in the vault, right? So it was back in the vault. We've got all of 32 going to all of the new denizens to 32 get ready to go. Woody freaking out, you know, him trying to leave. That seems reasonable. That's the most, you know, fucking plausible thing so far is nope. I live here. I live over, not over there. I'm here. And just that panic of, I don't want to move. I don't want to change, you know, change is scary. Change is bad. And then of course sorry about that. That was weird. Oh, I understood that reference. Now I got you.
Thanks, but we weren't Cal. There yet. My timing is not that of Chris Parnell's.
But then, yes, then we learn the big reveal, I feel like, is that Steph is going to be the interim overseer.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, because then that look that Chet gives to Norm, that exchange that they have between one another, like,
it just confirms
what have I got myself into.
She's from 31.
That Steph is from 31. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, another fantastic song kicks in from the first hello to the last goodbye. That's a great one. And then Norm just hightails it. And he's like, there's no time to waste. I'm just going to fucking book it. And he goes to Betty's terminal and he hacks in, which is another aspect of the game. You have to hack into terminals. And he's an expert at that.
Yep.
And so he decides to have a conversation with the overseer from Vault 31. Which is awesome. Just, oh shit. Like, of course, he's been suspecting something the whole time, and now he knows that there is a mission, right? He goads 31 into revealing that something is happening.
Mm-hmm. Something's afoot.
I know.
And it's not Thaddeus's.
And it's not Thaddeus's. But then I forgot that we actually get to peek inside of Vault 31, because I thought I love the idea of it ending with the hello in darkness.
Yes. My old friend. We're making a lot of music references today.
Hell yeah, we are. It's a music podcast, if you didn't know. It's a sports radio music podcast.
It's on Spotify.
Sometimes we talk about movies. And finally, right? So we're inside 31 and we get a little bit of a tease, just this long hallway walk. Creeping up, and boom, we're out. Yeah. And then finally, yes, Luke, 100%, you're right.
Yeah.
We got the Griffith Observatory as the credits animation scene and the craziness that happens around that.
It's okay. So it took me, for my first watch through, it took me to that credit scene to get it, that this was going from this episode into the next one. Because I knew that the Griffith Observatory was going to be in that final scene. So I was like, oh, yeah. That's, there it is.
Yeah.
That's what they've been doing this whole time. I mean, it's also just there's such great nods to the visuals of the games, too.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah,
just more of the world and more of you know, the references to everything that we know about it, what we don't know, you know, and just taking a little bit of artistic liberties. It's just, it's a fun thing. And I love that they've included that.
But we didn't talk about the main title sequence. What was it this time? Was it the acid?
Yes, you're right. The very main title card was one of the ones I did. I honestly, probably my least favorite in the entire series. It was just the, like, vat of acid or something. Yeah. You know, it felt bland compared to the rest. Mm-hmm. It felt bland. It wasn't necessarily, you know, tied to anything in particular. I guess you could make a case that it's, you know, we're in Vault 4, so that's where the, you know, acid is coming from, or
yeah,
I don't know. But yeah, so all these animations, all these title cards are fantastic. But all right, so yeah, so that's episode 7. Guys, we got one more left.
Woo.
Think we can do it?
I think we should record the next one, yes.
No, I think I'm done.
All right, that's fine. Cool. stick
around. We'll take a breather.
Stick around for more things, I guess, since we're not doing more Fallout.
Yeah, we'll talk about the boys.
Clearly, Matt hates this, and
I despise it.
He'd rather talk about the boys.
All right. Well,
don't make me hurt you. I will go full Omni-Man on you. not Homelander, because
that's not the boys.
I don't care.
All right, guys, have a great one. Enjoy the movies. Stick around for the next episode of Fallout while we wrap up the series. Give it our rating, and we'll talk to you later.
Just about to begin.
Bye-bye.
Bye.